right. Welcome back to the Catch Bit Show, everyone. We're joined by one of your co-hosts. This is Mike Moran, and we've got Neil Pinchard. Hi there, Neil.
Mike, how are you?
Doing great. A little wet and rainy here in Arizona, but we're muddling through it.
We've decided not to have winter in Minnesota anymore. I mean, awesome. I'm getting really used to these 40s and 50 degree days in January and now February. In the last couple of days, I've seen convertible cars with the tops down. I've seen multiple motorcycles. I'm a motorcyclist myself. And actually, it'd be kind of nice to get on a bike because normally in the springtime, clean up with all the salt and the sand is out there and it's miserable. And guys, older guys like me, are usually waiting for a couple of good rains or at least the sweeper trucks to go by. But my goodness, you can go out right now and there's no sand, there's no salt, there's no ice, there's nothing. And it's still darn near 50 degrees. So if you're tired of Arizona, Mike, you can move to Minnesota.
That's good news for all those guys with snowmobiles. They're putting less miles on them. They'll last longer that way, right?
Well, Mike, I'd like to hear a little, as our usual, your shop talk and what's going on with your knives and your customers.
Nothing super exciting. Just plodding along, making single-bladed pocket knives. And that's my plan for the rest of the year. It's tough to like stay in that groove. You know, a lot of times I'll carry around a Whittler or a, you know, 3 or 5 bladed knife and say to myself, man, I got to make one of these. But I'm trying to, for the next couple of years, stay into that groove where I'm just making one blade at a time and perfect that process and be able to do that in my sleep and address any issue that could possibly come up with them and refine them as best I can before I make that jump. Sometimes, some weeks it's tougher than others. I find myself getting distracted and then, you know, starting to draw out 3-bladed pattern or something like that. Then I snap out of it, get back to the grinder and get back to work. But yeah, that's it. Just making knives. And, you know, I revamped my selling process at the beginning of the year a little bit. I think I've mentioned it before, but I'm on my third payment processor. I've just been super unlucky with these beta males out there, I guess, chasing after us knife guys and trying to make it a fair process for people to buy knives from me. I don't think there's a great way of selling knives when you can only make one or two a week, but I've been playing around with new concepts and new ideas, but for the most part, I've just been selling them through email. So I send out an email when the knife's done and you can click the link. And before, people would know that I sold through my website, so they just sit on my website, camp out, and hit refresh. And I see like 25 guys sitting there hitting refresh. But now you get a unique link, and you have to wait for that email. So hopefully that helps a few other folks get knives, and that's what I've been doing.
I know in our last episode, we talked to Austin about his customer base, and he has a few customers that are just absolute regulars continually buying from him. And I would bet that you're kind of in the same boat, that you must have some guys that say, man, I've gotten a couple of Moran knives and now I want several more. I don't know if that makes it difficult too, if you only can release, like you said, so many at a time. You're dealing with guys who want to get their first knife from you, as well as customers who are good established customers who say, look, I want more of what you got. And that must be difficult. I got to think that you can only produce so much and that the demand outweighs the supply. Is that the case?
Yeah, absolutely. So I can't make enough knives to satisfy the demand, which is always a good problem for somebody selling something. But I want to get as many knives into as many hands as I can. I am blessed that I have a few guys that would definitely buy everything I make. I'm very grateful for that. But and at the same time, I want to get my knives out there to other folks as well. So anyway, I probably could sell to a couple of guys and make a living off of it. But that's also a little risky proposition and can't get more knives out there that way. So,
yep.
So I try to spread the love around. So, Neil, a few months back, and I apologize, I forget the month, but you wrote an article in Knife Magazine on Whittlers, a little primer, and I thought that'd be a good topic. We haven't really talked about Whittlers on this show yet.
I agree, Mike. We've done a couple of fun history episodes with different knives, Barolo and Remington and a few others. And you're right, I did read an article recently. I don't even remember when it was. It was 2 or 3 or 4 months back for Knife Magazine. But the Whittler's always been one of my favorite patterns. I just love the look of a Whittler knife. And I guess we should start by kind of describing what a Whittler is. You know, most guys would think, oh, a Whittler knife, any knife you're going to carve with. Well, the Whittler is really a...
It's not really a pattern, right?
It's a pattern. It's a modern name for an old knife. And in a nutshell, the Whittler has one main blade that folds in between two smaller blades at the opposite end. Some purists say that the two smaller blades both have to be cutting blades, like a spear or a coping blade. But most guys would say, you know what, a nail file still counts, or possibly even another tool, as long as there's two small blade tools of some type that main blade folds into. Kind of like we had a nice chat with Charlie a while back on the harness jack knives. And the harness jack is another knife that has... it's an old pattern, you know, dating back to the 1800s, but the name is really relatively new. Definitely a post-World War II, you know, signature name for that style of a knife. And the Whittler is really the same thing. Even though Whittler knives have been around since the early 1800s, the name, the first time, and actually when I wrote that article for Knife Magazine, I had written in there that Case was the first one I could see that used the actual name Whittler on a three-bladed knife like we just talked about that has a one main blade folding in between two smaller blades. Before that, those types of knives were always listed as a three-blade knife. And whether that's an English pattern or an American pattern, those knives were never called a Whittler. But I did, since I'd written that article, I did find... the use of that name a little bit earlier, and I found it in a Schrade Walden catalog from 1953, where they used the word Whittler referring to a knife that has the one main blade folding into two smaller blades. So people say, well, geez, the Whittler name's been around forever. And yes, it has. In fact, Mayer and Grosch in 1890 had a knife they had called the Yankee Whittler. And people say, oh, there you go. There's a Whittler from way back. But the thing is, that Yankee Whittler was a three-bladed knife, but all three blades folded out from the same end. So it wasn't the Whittler that we think of as a traditional Whittler pattern. And then a little later on, John Russell had the Whittler's kit, which was really cool. A kit for boys and presumably for girls too, but it was called the Whittler's kit, which came out in 1920 and was also around in 1921. But even though it was called the Whittler's kit, it had a one-blade Barolo knife in that kit. So there again, they used the Whittler name, but it wasn't the Whittler knife that we think of as of today.
No, it makes a lot of sense. I've seen the name Whittler etched on blades, etc. before. Obviously, they weren't Whittlers. At least they weren't the type of Whittler that we refer to nowadays, which I think is more of a configuration, like you mentioned, where the main blade folds in between two opposing secondary blades, or I guess implements. I don't have any Whittlers that have opposing secondaries that aren't blades. But I guess they're out there, huh? Were there brands out there that were known for doing that?
Well, Mike, I was going to save this knife for the last one because it's probably one of my favorite Whittlers. But here is a Horseman's Whittler. Sheffield, mid to late 1800s, has the horse pick on the back and a corkscrew in the middle. And it has a locking blade with a cool lock right above the pivot pin for the horse pick right here. And then inside, it has, on the opposite end of the main blade, it has a long, small spear blade and a button hook. So there you go. You could say, well...
Okay, and you're calling that a Whittler versus
I'm calling that a Whittler
lobster?
Because it has one main blade that falls in between two smaller blades. Now, technically, is a button hook a blade? Well, yes and no. I mean, it's a lot of times they'll call tools a blade. So I'm probably stretching the definition a little bit, but I still would call this a Whittler knife. It has, like I said, one big main blade, which folds right in between, not alongside, but in between these two smaller blades. And it just happens to have on the backside a horse pick for cleaning out the horseshoes, and then a corkscrew behind that. And that kind of brings up another odd form of a knife, which would be the lobster pattern. The lobster pattern has blades that kind of fold out from both the front and the back side of the knife. Well, there are lobster knives that are in the form of Whittler that have a one main blade folding in between two regular cutting blades, but then on the back side they might have another blade that folds out in some other form or fashion. So it's like so many topics and subjects about regarding knives, is that there's always an exception to every rule, and there's always something that you go, well, here's something that's a little off the beaten path, but it could still be considered something that you're referencing, in this case a Whittler.
Yeah, I think you could make the case for a button hook. I'll tell you what, you get a button hook in your eye and you'll say it's sharp, right?
Yeah,
just like a blade, I guess.
That's right. Yep.
It's kind of funny. You just never know when you need a button hook.
That's right. So I think the next question people would ask is that when did the Whittlers first appear? And as far as I can tell, they appeared in the real early 1800s. A lot of us refer to Smith's Key, which came out in 1816, as a good reference for a lot of early knives. But there are no Whittlers in there, and I can't find any Whittler knives in some other French catalogs from the late 1700s. So as far as I can tell, the Whittler knife that we know of today came out sometime in the early 1800s, and the oldest example I have is from a company called Thomas René, and with the address that's on this knife, it dates from 1837 to 1841. So I know that this particular knife that I have in my hand here dates to the 1830s. This knife happens to be a really interesting example. It is a traditional Whittler pattern with one Wharncliffe blade folding in between two smaller blades. One is a coping and one is a spear. But the really interesting thing about this knife is that this is what's called a true split spring on the back. And it's kind of hard for probably Mike to see this picture, but this has one spring in the back that is split into two. So the big part of the spring is what the main blade rides on, and the back part of the spring, which actually is cut in half, each of the two smaller blades ride on that individual spring. There's been a lot of debate as to how the Cutlers did this. I don't think they possibly split this spring. My own theory is that they took two springs and forge welded them together basically at one end. I think they heated them up, yeah, forge welded them, and then took, yeah, and kind of filed them down a little bit, and you really can't see that split in reality ran all the way to one end. These types of split spring knives, or what they call a true split spring, are really rare, really uncommon. I only know of a handful of these that exist, mostly because they come on knives that do date to the mid-1800s, so the survival rate is really low. The most common split spring knife that we see has a shim running down the back. So it's two separate springs, and then there's a shim. Here's a good example. Here's a case that they call a seahorse, and the seahorse is really a Wharncliffe pattern.
Yep.
But you can see that shim, and it's two separate springs, so that when the two springs come together at the main blade end, the two springs act as one blade for that main blade to open and close on. And then at the other end, the two individual springs, one spring, feeds each individual smaller blade. In this case, there's a small clip blade and a small coping blade. So a cool idea. But again, I've just always loved the look of a Whittler type knife. They come in a lot of different configurations. Probably the Wharncliffe / Seahorse is one of the most common. But another one that I've always kind of liked are the jumbos, the ones that have a bigger end on one end and a smaller on the other. And it's a real common pattern. Neat knife.
When you say split spring, you're right. You don't see many of those. You definitely see manufacturers that have used either thicker steel or just a liner, and they've tapered it down like you described in the second case. And it kind of looks split, but it's just a tapered liner. I have Whittlers that have sit on two springs, which is kind of neat. So the two secondaries each have a spring, and then the main blade rides on both springs, and there's no split in there. Great Eastern Cutlery makes their number, I think it's a 29 pattern. Don't quote me on that, people that are listening, but it, I think they call it the Stockyard Whittler, and it's a Eureka pattern, and it's got, it's a Whittler. It's got three springs that run side by side with no liners in between. So every blade's got a spring, kind of unique, kind of fat, but kind of unique.
I didn't know that GEC made a three spring Whittler, and that was the second knife I was going to point out. Here's an old Ulster that also has this three spring back spring. So there's one spring for each individual blade. And you're right, Mike, it does make kind of a chunky little knife. I mean, they're still cool when you look at the back, you turn them over and you go, oh, it's just neat seeing three springs and three blades. But it makes for a hefty little pocket carry. You're right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a little thick.
Even though Whittlers are among my favorite patterns, my favorite Whittler is probably the Lackback Whittler. And Case had a real nice special offering that was made by Tony Boas, actually made the original one. But Tony certainly didn't make the first Lackback Whittlers. I mean, they've been around since at least the early 1900s. So our Canadian friend Ridian had made a beautiful rendition of a Lackback Whittler also. And Mike, did he win an award with that knife? Was that one of them that won an award?
I think he did. I think he won an award at the Eugene show last year, didn't he?
Yeah, I think so. I had heard a story. I don't know if it was Ridian telling us or somebody else, but somebody had called Tony Boas asking him for some advice and tips on making a Lackback Whittler. And from what I've heard, Tony was always a great guy and a great mentor to so many other knife makers. And he explained a few things and told the guy a few tips and tricks. And then in the end, he kind of chuckled and he said, now good luck with that. And that was his way of saying, you're taking on one of the hardest knives in his opinion to make, which would be a Lackback Whittler. And Ridian pretty much confirmed that, saying, oh man, that was not an easy knife to put together.
For the last, seems like decade, if you showed up to Blade Show Atlanta with a Lackback Whittler as a custom maker, you're pretty much guaranteed to go home with some sort of award. But Evans made that a little more difficult with his Sheffield exhibition knives.
Right.
It's a tough pattern. I think most knife makers recognize that for sure. You know, Ridian's got a new difficult challenge, though, speaking of our Canadian friend, in that he's trying to make the marble safety knife, that big monstrosity.
Oh, right.
So he's been working on that lately. It's been fun to follow along. Yeah.
We were talking a little earlier about some of the various patterns, and you find the Whittler in a lot of different configurations. Here's a real pretty example that's a Congress that was made by Boker. This happens to be an old knife, a pre-World War II knife. And this one does have a nail file as one of the two small blades. But what an elegant shape. I'm not a huge Congress fan, but in this pattern, being a Whittler and being kind of a small Whittler, I really do love it. And it's a nice pocketable knife.
Yeah, that's a nice specimen.
Do you know of any other patterns that GEC makes?
Oh, Whittler-wise?
Yeah.
Over the years, GEC's made a cigar pattern Whittler, a sleeve board pattern Whittler. We've talked about the Eureka Whittler, and I'm not sure. There's probably other ones, too. Those are the ones that come to mind. They have a number 38 as well. That's a Whittler configuration. They call it the Grinling Whittler. But it's looks like a Warncliffe type of configuration. So they've definitely made a few, for sure.
I know that the single blade is your bread and butter, but if you were to make a multiple blade knife, would you consider a whittler, or would you just make a standard jack with a second blade, either pivoting from the same end or the opposite end?
Well, I have done that before with opposing blades. Probably one of my favorite whittler patterns. I would make a whittler. I wouldn't make a Stockman.
Good.
But nothing against the Stockman.
No, I agree.
I like the smaller sleeve boards, like the 3-inch size with two springs. So I'm a big fan of those with a catch bit on the, the side with the secondaries. So I think that would be a tough pattern to make. I think they look good. So that's something I would make. Small knives don't sell super well for me. So it'll be a while before I make it. But eventually, that's one that I really want to make.
It's funny you mentioned the Stockman, because I have nothing against the Stockman either. And Stockmans are usually a three blade with two blades at the main blade end and one at the other end. And for years, Camillus has called their number 72 a whittler. But most guys would agree that it doesn't really fit the definition of what most collectors or most enthusiasts call the whittler. It's still a great knife, and it's a great pattern. It's a nice pocket size. But again, personally, if I had my choice, I would take a true whittler over a Stockman. And I don't know why. I guess I just like the appearance of that better. I just think it's a cool-looking knife.
Yeah, and typically thinner, too. Typically.
Right.
If you're going to carry three blades around. I've got a Camillus here in my hands that's a whittler. And you know what?
Really?
It's got a clip primary, a pen secondary, and a nail file. And I guess I never realized it because the nail file is so hard to get out that I've never really toyed with it much.
But is that a Camillus?
Yeah, beautiful knife. Sure is.
Okay, then it's
Charlie gave that to me.
As far as I know, Mike, that's a really old knife. I mean, old meaning probably pre-war. I don't think the Camillus made a real small pen blade whittler post-war, but not a knife that size. I think that's a really old knife, and I think that's a pretty rare knife, to be honest. And I would take a guess it's something in the 30s or 40s.
It probably is.
Huh. And that's real bone, isn't it? Jig bone handles?
Yeah, it's beautiful.
He made a mistake. He gave you a pretty valuable knife.
He did. You screwed up, Charlie.
You gave Mike a knife that's, you probably weren't thinking that's as rare and as old as it is. So we'll have to buzz Charlie on that next time we have him on.
That's a beautiful knife. Huh?
Charlie go, Camillus Whittler? I didn't mean to give him that knife.
Yeah, Charlie's given me a few beautiful knives for sure.
Good.
I think I totally agree with you that a Whittler is a configuration where the main blade slides in between two opposing blades and or implements. Because apparently the nail file was a thing, manicure blade. You know, honestly, we call it a manicure blade, don't we? Even though it's not really a blade.
Yes.
Have we talked about that before? I mean, that's what I call it, is a manicure blade, even though it doesn't have a cutting edge on it.
Right. So there you have it. You know, if Mike and I say it's a Whittler, it's a Whittler. I mean.
Yeah. Yeah. Whittler's not so much a pattern as we've talked about it, like you would call a sleeve board or a swell center jack or canoe or whatever you want to call the pattern. It's more of a configuration.
Right.
Hopefully we've settled that. The science is settled, Neil.
That's right.
Well, Neil, we're in February now, and that means knife shows are right around the corner. A lot of them happening this year. And what are you planning on attending? Do you have the lineup? Is it the usual cast of characters, or you got something new this year?
Mike, I am excited as always. Usually it means that spring's coming, but as I've been joking earlier, spring's already here in Minnesota. But I am looking forward to three shows coming right up. And the first one is Janesville, Wisconsin. And for me, that's a pretty close show. It's just over the border. I'm going with a good friend of mine, Barrett, who I've gone with the last couple of years. And that's a really good show. It's a smaller show, but it's warm and friendly. Some good antique stuff there. I met up with Jason Ritchie last year down there, and several other guys that post a lot on Blade forums. We usually meet up at Cracker Barrel, have breakfast Friday morning, and then hit the show. I think it opens 11 or 12 on Friday. And then we stay overnight. Barrett and I stay overnight. Most of the guys do. It's kind of nice because the hotel is attached to the conference center where the show is. And then spend most of Saturday goofing off and talking to guys and buying knives. And the show is open on Sunday also, but generally Barrett and I head out Saturday afternoon and then make about a five-hour trip back. So I would really say anybody who's in kind of the Midwest area, that Janesville Knife Show is a good one to hit. And then right after that, not shortly after that, Oregon, April, heading out to the Eugene Knife Show. Eugene is absolutely my favorite show of the year. I love Blade Show. Blade Show is huge. It's an extravaganza that everybody should go to. But Oregon is your classic vintage show. Great guys. A big show. A lot of tables. It's been going on for decades. They did have it canceled a couple years from COVID and a few years after that. So it's back up and running now. But I'm heading out there with some good friends, and there's always a ton of good stuff to find. Like I said, good dealers, good knives, a wonderful show. And that's the territory of Bernard Levine is out there. Our great friend Charlie Compagna. Radian's going to be there. There's so many guys from the West Coast. I would say don't miss the Oregon show. Mike, you were talking about it. Do you think you might make it to the Oregon show?
It's not looking good right now. I'm still paying off this move to Arizona. I'm not sure it's going to be in the cards this year. In fact, I'm not even sure. Blade Show Atlanta is looking a little iffy right now. We'll see.
Now, Mike, I've already told you, you got a free couch to sleep on in Oregon. We're renting a B&B with a couple of us guys. It's going to be fun. You got free lodging, and you can bum out with us in our car. You might have to ride in the trunk. You know, if we start filling up the back seat with knives, might have to shove you in the trunk, but you can still get around.
Well, you're twisting my arm, huh? Well, we'll see. Let me look at the calendar here. That might be a strong possibility. I have never been to Eugene's show, so it's definitely one I want to go to. And I know a lot of the guys that are there, they're getting older. I guess we all are. It'd be good to meet some of them.
Yes. Our friend Bill Clausen will be there, who runs Northwest Knives. He'll be at Oregon. That's kind of his home base. And then he'll be at Blade Show in Atlanta. And then Mike and I have had such good, the last couple of years, we've had so much fun at the Blade Show. There again, I would tell anybody, if you're close to a Blade Show, just go. I mean, it's so huge, and there's so much neat stuff to see. There's a fair amount of vintage stuff. There's an awful lot of custom makers, and then purveyors like crazy selling just everything, you know, hunting knives and custom knives. And it's a good place to just to meet a lot of the new makers. There'll be other guys there that host podcasts like us. And it's just, it's so big that every year I don't get a chance to see as many people as I'd really love to see. But man, Eugene, Oregon and the Blade Show.
All right. He's twisting my arm. I might go to the Blade Show in Salt Lake City as well. That's a tentative one to visit this year. Again, I'm not planning on exhibiting, but I might go to that one just for funsies.
Any of your knife maker friends going to that show?
Yeah, definitely. Quite a few guys I know that make pocket knives would be at that show for sure.
And how far a drive is that for you?
It's not close. Probably like 9 or 10 hours, I'm guessing.
Oh, ouch.
You got to drive up around the Grand Canyon and, yeah, up through all of southern Utah. It's not there's no direct route.
You do have a nearly 16-year-old son now, right? Who could drive while you sleep?
Yeah. I don't know if I'd feel comfortable enough to sleep while he's driving. But yeah. He's almost 16. He's been driving. Every time we go out, he's driving. And he's a big car fanatic, as we all were when we were 15, and he thinks he's going to be a race car driver, so he's trying to twist my arm to let him sign up for some rally racing here in Arizona. So it's going to be an interesting year for sure.
Yes, it will.
Might have to make more knives pay for the car insurance.
That's right. Mike, you ever listening to e-books when you're out traveling? Because I had a buddy, two brothers that were just out at the motorcycle auction in Las Vegas, and they listened to a couple of e-books on the way there and back. And one was on, I forget the fellow's first name, but his last name is Diesel. And that's the fellow who developed, invented the diesel engine. And the part of the story, and I've heard this before, was that he had a mysterious death, a disappearance at some point, and evidently was supposedly turned back up in Canada under an assumed name. But anyway, it just sounds kind of cool to play a few books if you got a long road trip to head somewhere.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm always listening to something. All right. Well, Neil, that was fun talking a little bit about Whittlers, and we hope to see you folks out at least one knife show this year. And I'll try and firm up my schedule, Neil. Again, thanks for listening, and we'll catch you on the next episode.